This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeline Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, 2018, The Good, The Bad and The Utterly Bizarre.
Well, we've made it, Jules. We've got through another year.
We have got through another year. 2018, slightly better than 2017?
In some ways. It's been a weird year, hasn't it?
It has been a really, really strange year.
It's been a very strange year. We've had some good things and we've had some bad things. And we've had some utterly crazy, crazy things as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking back through my bullet journals before I sort of made my list of things to talk about for the show. And I'm amazed at how much has actually happened inside a year, as in some of this stuff I thought happened 2 years ago, because it feels almost like it has.
Yeah, it does feel I keep having to remind myself of things that I did in January, and I thought, no, that was ages ago, and it was just this year that quite a lot of stuff has happened. There's been a lot of shift and focus. We've both come out with different works. You've definitely published more than I have this year. But before we start talking about, you know, the books and series and stuff like that that we liked or didn't like, I kind of want to give the year a bit of a rundown and look at some of the weird things, the weird speculative fiction things which have happened this year.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the weird general things, the atmosphere we're writing in, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we have to briefly mention the political climate within Britain.
Yeah, at this point, in fact, no, actually, at several points ago, I think they should have probably hit the wall where they said, no, this is a farce and we're not playing anymore. But no, they're still going.
It's still going. It's still going. It is like it's almost like a pantomime.
Yeah.
Except it's not funny.
Except the audience is sat there horrified. It's like, we don't care who did it. We just want you to undo it.
Yeah. It's just been a bit bonkers, actually, the whole thing. Whether you agree with it or not, I think we can all safely say that things are not going well. Whether you want Brexit or you don't want Brexit, the general organiser, it's in total disarray. No one really knows what's going on.
It's a complete clusterfuck, yeah, basically.
And no one is happy either. No one is happy with what's happening. And it's just a big mess. And then over in America, it's a huge mess as well.
Yeah.
Increasingly. I'm not even going to talk about France, which is basically on fire right now. Well, the French are doing what they do best, which is protesting. I'll tell you what, no one protests like the French. They are every other day, they're doing it. French students are notorious protesters. And to be honest, considering like their educational system, I'm not surprised, actually, that they're protesting quite so much of the time.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's been very, very peculiar in that sense. And of course, we've had even more warnings about climate change. And it's a bit doom and gloom, actually. So that's the environment that we're writing in. In terms of entertainment, moving away from politics and the gloom and the dire, we've had actually a really good year in terms of new releases and new movies and things like that. There's actually been an assortment of fairly good cinema, actually, I think.
Yeah, there really has. This is another one where I was looking back through the bullet journals to find out, what did I do this year? It's a good job I keep journals, because otherwise I wouldn't know. Seriously, I thought Black Panther came out last year, but it came out this year.
It did. And yeah.
Which is nuts. So,
like, hold on a second. Actually, Black Panther did come out this year. Black Panther came out the same year as the Ant-Man 2 and Ant-Man and Wasp. There's been quite a fair bit of stuff which has come out that we weren't necessarily expecting to have actually come out this year, but it did. It just feels so long ago. But anyway, we're not going to go too much into that because obviously we'll be covering
to it.
Yeah, some of our favourite things like that. So let's talk about some of the weird things that have happened.
Yes.
And the moment Jules said, right, it's time for us to look at the highlights and lowlights of the year and some of the weird things. And the moment she said that, I just went, Soapgate, 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 Soapgate.
Soapgate deserves a special mention. would you mind like refreshing people's memories in case perhaps they missed that episode?
In case they missed that episode or they missed that whole phenomenon. Soapgate was in reference to a boyfriend book box. For those who you can basically have sort of bookish boxes delivered to you, and they usually contain bits of, you know, memorabilia,
artwork inspired
artwork, copies of books and things like that. And there are all sorts of, you know, there's loot boxes that, I mean, there's all sorts of different kinds. And this was a 18 plus loot box, and it was called the Illyrian Boyfriend Box. And the idea was that this was all based on the A Court of Thorns and Roses series. And you could basically get a box which had some, which was, you know, had some sexy material in it, inspired by the three Illyrian characters from A Court of Thorns and Roses. So that's Rhysand, Cassian, and Azrael. And you could also have a specialized, basically, whether you wanted to it to be from Cassian or Azrael or Rhysand or a mixture of the three. Now, this box, the reason the hashtag was Soapgate was that within this box, there were two soaps that you could have, which were shaped like highly detailed penises.
They were pretty realistic looking, apart from being blue.
Yeah, blue and veiny. As in, it was anatomically correct. A bit smaller. Well, depends, I guess. But anatomically correct.
And so much so that people thought that they were getting dildos, not soap.
Yeah, and they had to be warned, please, 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 please don't use this as a dildo. That would be very, very bad for your private parts. Now, this is the bit that everyone kind of was up in arms about, because they were all like, oh, how dare you know, this is a YA series. You shouldn't be sending dick soap to people. But actually, that's not the bit that really got me with the whole Soapgate thing. First of all, A Court of Thorns and Roses is not YA. It's new adult. It is for 18 to 24 year olds, really. It's kind of, yeah, it's aimed at an older audience. Second of all, the box was 18 plus, and it was fairly explicit that you would be getting sexual kind of content within it. So, fair enough. And then the whole dick soap thing, you know, it's the kind of thing you get at hen do's and stuff like that. So, actually, a bit weird, but ultimately kind of funny. Not really a problem. The real problem, however, with Soapgate was that within the box, first of all, you got a personalised letter from one of the characters, or two of the characters, and you also got a little novella or booklet of fan fiction. Now, this was so illegal!
Yeah, this is a complete violation of copyright for Sarah J. Maas, and I don't think ultimately they pursued it. I don't think the publishers pursued it either. Mm-hmm. But yes, the problem is that somebody was paid to create that fan fiction to include it in this Illyrian boyfriend box, and yeah, that's copyright theft.
Yeah,
and it really highlighted the fact that inspired by can be a way of getting around copyright theft, and most people who do these book subscription boxes actually work with the authors and with the publishers to create content that actually supports the books and makes people want to buy more copies, etc., etc. So everybody wins. But this was really not what was happening here.
It really wasn't what was happening at all. And yeah, there's a difference between writing just regular fan fiction and then getting paid to write fan fiction. And this was fan fiction which was being distributed because it was paid for. So that was a big problem. The letters themselves were so poorly written They were so bad. I saw clips of it. I'm like, first of all, this is nothing like how the characters speak at all. Within one letter, I think there was like three typos. And hey, I understand typos get through, especially on longer pieces of work. But this letter was a page long. It was a page long. It you should really not have had typos in something that was only a page long, especially considering the amount that people were paying for these boxes. Further to that, as I said, the writing just was abysmal. I think the letter from Asriel was literally signed off, "Fuck you later."
It
Who
was.
says that?
It wasn't. It was just like, nobody talks like that. That not even
Nobody
a
talks.
f fantasy character would talk like that.
Yeah, and like if you did, I don't know, "fuck you later" sounds more like a threat than a.
That's not, yeah, let's make sweet love, is
No,
it?
it definitely isn't, especially from a character who would be the one saying "sweet love." You know what I mean? Like, that just wasn't. It was so out of character. The
Yeah.
writing was not good, and.
I saw a video of somebody reading a tiny snippet of the novella, and that's not great. That's actually a real understatement. It's terrible.
Oh
It's
no.
really, really appalling. I didn't listen to all of it, but I was just like, my curiosity's got the better of me. I know I'm going to regret this, but okay, I'm pressing play. And it is incredibly badly written, but I mean, that's almost beside the point, isn't it? Because it's fan fiction of somebody else's work. Someone's taken someone else's characters and hasn't compensated them accordingly or got their permission. So it's not like me taking a couple of Madeline's characters and writing really, really bad sex scenes with them, which, offend everybody because they're just so badly written. This is me taking that without her permission and getting paid for it. It's
I mean,
not cool.
I'd totally be up for you writing terrible if only because it would be hilarious. But yeah, the getting paid for it without any permission, and it's just it's so bizarre that they managed to get to that stage, and at no point did they think, "Hold on a second, this is in breach of copyright. We could get into serious trouble here." And at no point, at literally no point. And the fun fact is that it might have very well gone under the radar. It might never have been caught on, on a wide scale, if it weren't for the fact that they included dick soap in their loot box.
And I suppose that's the thing. While everyone was being sort of, oh my God, and clutching their pearls over, my God, gasp penises. Because God forbid we should talk about sex like it's a normal thing. You're quite right. The whole being compensated for fan fiction thing might have got swept under the rug, and that was the real issue. And obviously, laws around book subscription boxes and things like that really need to be clarified. And people creating these things, I think they're great. I think they're a great idea. I'd love to get in one kind of thing, ultimately. But you really need to be careful what you're putting out there. So yes, that was one really bizarre and pretty bad thing that happened. I mean, it's funny, but it's bad.
So that's the one very bizarre thing. I think
I've got the other one, the other really, really odd one,
go on.
which is Cocky Gate.
Ah yes, Cocky Gate. Right, okay. Again, for those who don't remember us discussing this, Jules, would you just like to run over Cocky Gate?
Yes, strap yourself in. This is a wild ride. This is amongst the romance community of indie authors, and an author called Felina Hopkins trademarked the word cocky, which means that other people are now not allowed to use the word cocky in their titles, rather. And there was some discrepancy over whether they could use the word at all. It's utterly ridiculous. Because she's gone after people and sent subpoenas to people who wrote books that were published 4 years before hers. This is all to do with the Cocker Brothers of, I don't know, Seattle or somewhere. And so she's got a series of books called Cocky Fireman, Cocky Lodger, Cocky Stew. I don't know, whatever you can come up with. There's a cocky one. They're really bad. Her writing's not great. Actually, don't read her blog posts. I was going to say, read her blog posts, get an idea, but no, actually don't. Just in case it converts you and turns you to the dark side or something. There's one that's utterly terrible. Anyway, she's just sending these threatening letters. She's subpoenaing people. Several authors who hadn't got a clue who she was have been summoned to court. There's a transcript out there. You wouldn't have to look very hard to find it if you really are that desperate for entertainment over the Christmas and the New Year. And you can read it. And it again, it's one of those things where I look at it and think, oh my God, this is farce. Surely this isn't real. It can't be real. Nobody can possibly be like this. This is like the most humorous of Dickensian characters doing slapstick, but with a sexual edge to it. And I don't know, it's really not great. When I say romance, it's more the erotica end of romance. I mean, it's not just porn. There's apparently a plot and things, but and there's nothing wrong with that. If you enjoy reading that, then that's great. If that gets your rocks off, good for you. And the same if you like sweeter romance with a bit more plot and a bit more build-up, etc. Again, there's nothing wrong with that. Just because I don't really read it, I'm not disparaging anybody else for that.
Yeah.
But this, from what I understand, the community of romance authors are some of the most supportive and sex-positive and shameless people you can meet. And, you know, they're really a great community to belong to if you happen to write that sort of thing or read that sort of thing. So for some one person to really throw a spanner in the works like this and start going after her peers and then to claim that she's the victim and she's being bullied is horrific.
Yeah.
And it would be a lot more horrific if the whole thing wasn't so bloody ridiculous. So yes, what the upshot is that one of the romance writers is an ex-lawyer, and he's taken the case on because he's like, well, I don't need the money, I just do this because I enjoy it. So good for him. And there, everybody's sort of piling behind him, so you've got X number of plaintiffs behind this one guy. I'm surprised it hasn't been thrown out of court already, because even in America, which is a much more litigious society than the rest of, well, probably the rest of the world, actually, in fairness, you would have thought that they go, actually, that really is ridiculous, and why are we wasting everybody's time on it?
But yeah.
I guess you've got to follow due process. So, yeah, that's a snapshot of Cockygate.
Just in case you forgot how crazy people could be, there we go.
Yeah.
So that's two of the weirdest things that have happened this year. I also think it's worth mentioning that they compiled a 2018 worst sex scenes again this year.
Oh, yeah, the Bad Sex Awards.
The Bad Sex Awards.
Were pretty epic this year, and we didn't discuss them, did we?
We didn't discuss them, and perhaps we'll touch on them at a later date. Yeah, with rubber gloves on and hand sanitizer. But we did have a glance at them, and I didn't think that we could beat last year's. But once again, the writing community proves to be... yes. Anyway.
It was very telling that they were all written by men, is all I'll say.
It's very, very, very telling that they were all written by men. And also, not just that, there were some pretty disturbing ones, actually.
The enamelled pepper mill.
You know what? Yeah, I didn't need you to remind me.
Actually, it's probably best we don't go into this. Just say, you know, if you're curious, bear in mind what the reward for curiosity usually is. But go forth with our blessing and be careful. I don't know. Make sure you've got some Jane Austen to hand afterwards.
Yeah, some palate cleanser. I need something sophisticated to wash out my eyes. Yeah, there you go. So there are some of the weird and odd and funny things that have happened this year within the general community. Now, Sorry, go on.
No. I was going to say there's been lots of good stuff, but actually, before we get to the good stuff,
yeah,
we should probably look at Let's get the stuff we didn't love quite so much out
Yeah,
the way.
we're going to start with that, and then we can end on a positive. So, should we go take one each and just interchange, if that makes sense? Interchange, you know what I mean.
Yeah, we'll go back and forth. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll start. This isn't speculative fiction, though I guess it has speculative elements, maybe. At the beginning of the year, I saw the Book of Mormon.
Was it this year? I thought that was last year.
It was this year.
Oh my God.
I think it was this year. Was it last year? God, I don't actually know anymore. If it wasn't this year, then I don't remember what I saw this year. Because I see a play every at the beginning of every year.
I thought you'd been to see The Cursed Child at the beginning of this year, and then obviously I went and saw it in May.
Yeah, no, I did see The Cursed Child, but that was separate. That was separate. I went to see that on my own. Well, on my own with a friend, but I think I went to see the Book of Mormon this year, at the beginning of this year.
It's okay. I'll take your word for it. I've had no concept of time,
Yeah, no,
apparently.
neither do I. I'm very confused. I honestly, I just can't remember what it. I don't know if I went to see something else. Maybe I did. Maybe I'm very confused. Either way, I'm going to mention the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, okay.
I know you're a big fan of it.
Well,
Or
I'm a moderate fan.
that you enjoyed it. I did like it, but actually I did walk out of it feeling kind of a bit gross and hollowed out inside.
It pulls no punches, and there are subjects in there that, if you prefer them dealt with in a slightly different way, then it probably won't leave you feeling like great. And that's a fair point, I think.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah, it just it hit me just a tad hard, actually. Yeah. But anyway, it was a very interesting play. There was some great humor in it as well, so I'm not gonna lie. And I'm totally wrong. You're right. I did go and see it. It wasn't this year. There we go. My understanding of time and space is just so messed up. It wasn't this year. Actually, this year I went to see Young Frankenstein,
Oh, right.
which is actually also worth mentioning. I did really enjoy that, but actually it had Ross Noble in it. I think Ross
Right.
Noble, I think that's his name.
I'll take your word for it.
And he was playing the Igor character. And actually, the funniest part of the play was when there was a technical fault and Ross Noble had to come forward and just do some stand-up because they were waiting for everything to be fixed behind the curtain, and so they did do some stand-up, and that was actually the funniest part of the play. Like, I did enjoy the rest of it, but that bit was actually the most entertaining part. So there we go. All right, I'm off to a good start. Sorry, I'm very confused, clearly.
Nope, that's okay. Okay, I don't have a specific thing I want to say. I hated it, except that most of mine come down to an increase I've noticed in tropes and trends that I really, really don't like. So I'll start off with one that has been my absolute bugbear this year, and it has, I mean, I've read a lot of books, as in if I've read 156 books this year so far. That's not a bragging thing. That's just to give you a baseline of exactly why this is. This is not a case of I've read one or two books with this in. I've read dozens of books with this trope in, and it's really pissing me off.
Yeah.
And that is rape threat used in young adult fiction as shorthand for this is a bad guy,
Yeah.
and as a way to cut down a competent female character. And it just really, really pisses me off. There are so many other things you can do, like actually give your bad guys characterization for a start. It's lazy writing, and all it does is promote the idea that rape and rape threat and sexual assault are normal, and they're not at
Yeah.
all. So I want to see less of that, in books and speculative fiction. I'm not going to name culprits because I think at the end of the year we should be trying to sort of, you know, we should be trying. I'm scathing the rest of the time. Let's pull other writers up on this episode. So I'm not going to name names, but that is something that it really bugs the hell out of me. And mostly because of the laziness, but also because of the idea that rape and sexual assault are part of the natural female experience.
Yeah.
And surely that should be something that should be changed. If we think of all the other things that have come out this year, various movements, various lists, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's my big, I hated it. I hated seeing this as an increase in this year. And I really hope when I read 150 books next year, I see a lot less of it.
I haven't even read, like, if I divide your number of books by 10, I haven't even read that many. I was looking at my Goodreads challenge. I haven't even hit 15 books. Though, to be fair, a lot of the stuff that I've been reading has not been, you know, it's not been books. I've been doing other stuff
and
writing other stuff. So that's my defense. I'm completely with you on that. I tend to agree. And whilst I don't think... This isn't a message of no, don't include rape and rape threat and stuff like that within books. In certain places, it's appropriate. It might actually be part of your character's journey.
Yeah.
It might be something that you want to talk about, and that's absolutely fine. It's the use of it just as shorthand, in which actually it's not, it's just used casually. It's not actually used as something which is meant to be part of anything, meant to develop anything, meant to, you know, if you have a character who is a serial rapist, then yeah, them issuing rape threats is fairly in keeping.
Yeah.
But when you just have a character who's just, I'm a bad guy.
Well, there's been no sign of it before. There's one I can think of, again, I'm not mentioning names, but three guys have been starving on a mountain in the snow for 3 days, and the minute they find a woman on a horse with supplies, do they go after the supplies? Do they kill the horse for meat? Do they think, oh, we can get out of here? No, they think, hey, let's get my rape on.
Yeah, that's just very much not.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, so actually I'm going to touch on a couple of some tropes that continue to annoy me, to be honest. It's not just this year, but I keep seeing it this year.
Yeah.
And it was highlighted for me in Illuminae.
Okay, I still haven't read it.
Yeah, and again, I keep shitting on Illuminae, and I must put it, I did recommend it. It is one of our Dissecting Dragons recommendations, because I recognise that this is something very particular to me, but that it's a very good book, and it's so unique, and I think people would really enjoy it. But I hate the main character. I just hate her. And this is the thing, that it's the trope that really, really, really gets to me. And it's the, I'm a young person, I don't want to go to therapy. Therapy doesn't help me at all. And I just think it's so far from the truth.
Yeah.
And it's actually really damaging, the way that they kind of, they show therapy, that they say, oh, adults, they don't understand and stuff like that. Because actually I find that, of you know, the young people I've encountered who are suffering from mental health issues with PTSD and other things like that, have actually found counselling to be very effective.
Yeah.
Or have, you know, have actually been to professionals. And when you have this repeated kind of line, which is that they can't help me, they don't know what I'm talking about, they're just doing it because, you know, they're trying to help, but they can't. What you're basically telling young people is that that's the norm, that it's all fake.
You're
and that
alone.
Just because someone is paid to do something, you know, like, oh, they're only listening because they're paid to do it. And I saw this argument on Tumblr, and they really sort of, you know, summarized it quite succinctly. It's like, but that's ridiculous. You know, you wouldn't apply that to any other profession. Of course you're paying someone to sit and listen to you. They are a professional. They know what to do, how to say, how to help you develop coping mechanisms. You wouldn't say, well, I'm not going to let you operate on me because you're only operating on me because you're being paid to do it. You're not doing it from the bottom of your heart. Like, shut up.
Well, it's like you wouldn't say to an osteologist, no, you can't set my leg because you're being paid to do it.
Yeah. You would go to a restaurant and be like, no, I refuse to eat at this restaurant. Because you're not cooking it from the bottom of your heart. You're being paid to, like, that's just not how it works. Okay. Of course, if you go to a professional, they are. And the other thing is that it really gives this sense of, no, only I can only confide in my friends. And actually, really, realistically, you should be able to confide in your friends. You should be able to have a good relationship with your friends. Your friends and your partners, however, are not your psychiatrists. They are not your counselors. It is not their job, literally not their job, to prop you up. And when we continue to give this message of, no, it needs to be like that, and we refuse to acknowledge that medical professionals are actually there and are trying to help, okay, they're being paid, but yes, they are actually honestly trying to help, they're not just trying to take your money, you know, we need to step over that. And it's just a trope that really annoys me, the I'm special, I'm edgy, and I don't want to talk about my feelings. And the fact that somehow that's still, that there are no repercussions for that, that there's no sense of consequence. So that's one of my big tropes for the year.
Yeah. I have a further one. Again, it's a loose trope and I'm not going to name culprits, although I really could on this one. that's the self, not self insert, I mean the tick box exercise of using diversity as a unique selling point. Whereby you don't give characters characterization. The character is, this one is the gay black character. This character is the asexual disabled character, etc. And there is literally no characterization. There's nothing going on, to the point where you feel like when you're reading these books that perhaps they're actually taking the piss out of the people they say they're representing.
Yeah.
Some of them are worse than others. I would like to think, believe it or not, that it's a case of bad writing and lack of skill rather than deliberately trying to put out something that's harmful.
Yeah.
And I'm going to choose to believe that because it makes me happier. But it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable to suddenly change course without any foreshadowing and make one of your characters gay without doing a proper build-up. You can't use contrivance like that to wedge in diversity. You just can't do it. If you haven't included diverse characters, you haven't included them. Think about it for future books and think about doing it properly so that you end up with diverse characters who actually have character.
Yeah. And just, yeah, don't rely on stereotypes.
Yeah.
Remember that regardless of someone's gender, sexuality, physical ability, you know, neurodiversity and things like that, they're ultimately people.
Yeah.
And that you know, that will be an aspect of their life, but it's not going to inform everything about them. There Definitely. Are lots of other things.
So, those are my two big things for stuff that I hated about 2018.
Yeah.
And we could go on to some good stuff now, I think.
Wait, there's one more that I want to bitch about.
Okay.
Okay. Now this is a good crossover because I actually liked the new Fantastic Beasts.
I really liked it.
I really liked it. I enjoyed it. A lot of people have been very, very upset with it, but actually, I kind of liked it. I'm looking forward to the next one. The bit I didn't like was Queenie.
Oh no, that really annoyed me.
Yeah, it really, really annoyed me. And actually, the thing that really annoyed me straight from the start wasn't just that she went off and joined the equivalent of Wizard Hitler. Because, you know, if you squint, you can understand how she got pulled into it.
Yeah.
And how she might have been overwhelmed by him. You know, there might be an Imperius curse playing a part of that as well. There might be something else. We don't know. You know, perhaps she is doing it of her own volition entirely. And perhaps because she's so constantly connected with other people's minds, she's kind of just been sort of brainwashed a little bit by him. You know, he's a deeply charismatic character. He's meant to be. So all of those things can explain away. Now, the bit that really annoyed me was right at the start, she basically
Rohypnoled him.
She roofied her lover. She roofied her lover. And she was going to force him to marry her, force him to do something illegal, which could get them both in trouble. And yeah, and then she was exposed by Newt, who was like, that, and there was no sense of consequence. She just ran away, and he, Jacob, instantly sort of forgave her. And I guess that's, you know, part of Jacob. He thinks he's totally in love with her.
And he would marry her if it wouldn't put her in danger. He's not even really worried about himself. No. I think it was a big, a bit of clumsy foreshadowing, as in a big sort of, she could end up being one of the bad guys. She's willing to do anything to get what she wants here. And the fact that she wants love doesn't mean that it's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. But I just, it made me so uncomfortable because I liked her character in the first one. And in the second one, she just creeped me out. What the hell was that? Like, that was, she drugged him. She literally drugged him and tried to coerce him. If there had been, I mean, you could say that every kiss they shared during that time, you know, he wasn't in his right mind. He didn't willfully, you know, it's not like he willfully got drunk and he was doing anything like that. He had no control over the situation, and she was taking advantage of him. And yeah, that just wasn't cool at all. So I didn't like that one bit. I felt like they didn't really need to do that.
Yeah. I think you're supposed to feel uncomfortable with it. And I think that was kind of an attempt to redress the whole Merope and Thomas Riddle Sr. type thing, which doesn't ever really get discussed about in the Half-Blood Prince. You know, the fact that she basically was feeding him love potions all this time until she conceived a child, which, you know, basically is rape. But we don't go into that because it's a children's book.
Exactly,
But yeah, it was a little heavy-handed and possibly unnecessary, even if it was a, you know, we're signalling that actually she could be one of the bad guys. I have to say, though, since we're now moving on to good things, and as you said, it's a crossover, I really did actually enjoy that film. I know a lot of people complained about various aspects, and I'm not saying their opinions aren't valid, because they'll have a different perspective to me, but overall, I enjoyed it. I would have liked to have seen more of the Dumbledore-Grindelwald relationship, but it was mentioned, and perhaps it'll be developed in further.
Yeah, I think it was more represented than I feared it was going to be.
Yeah,
you know, and definitely the actors. I mean, certainly Jude Law was playing it like there was love there.
Yeah.
So that was subtle, but I liked the way they did it. Dumbledore just seems as manipulative as ever, which I'm not sure about I don't like manipulative Dumbledore. I much prefer early Dumbledore. He was just quite nice.
You prefer 1995 Dumbledore.
1995 Dumbledore. Dumbledore from books 1, 2, and 3.
Even though he was manipulating him all the way through. Anyway.
No, shut up. Let me have nice Dumbledore.
It was with good reason. Okay, yeah. I'm going to mention a book that I really loved this year. In fact, I've got so many of them, I won't get to talk about all of them. But I will mention this one. I absolutely loved Spinning Silver by Naomi Novak, which is loosely a retelling of Rumpelstiltskin, but actually your three main characters are three very different women who have rather a shitty hand dealt to them individually. There's a princess, there is a Jewish girl who, you know, takes over her father's money-lending business and actually becomes very, very good at it, to the point where she's literally, you know, figuratively spinning silver. And there is another girl who's a farm girl who's ignorant and has an abusive father. It's about her escaping from her father and rescuing her brothers and building some confidence and improving herself and getting enough of an education that she ultimately breaks free. And it's about the Jewish girl making an unfortunate boast and getting abducted by some trolls, or, you know, the cold fae kind of thing.
Yeah.
And making the best of that. And a princess who basically gets married off to someone who is possessed by a demon. The demon wants to consume her, so she has to find a way of getting away every night so that the demon can't find her. It's absolutely brilliant. It's multi-layered. It's feminist without being strident. It's clever, it's utterly immersive, and the language is beautiful. It's an amazing book. I think it might be my absolute top book of 2018.
Oh, well, there you go then.
Mostly fantastic. Mostly because Madeline hasn't brought out Kestrel yet.
Oh, shut up.
Hint, hint.
Okay, jeez. Yeah, well, I can't sort of go into my top favourite books without obviously mentioning Betwixt and Between.
Oh, thank you.
Well, no, I really, really loved it. You know how I feel about the whole series, but Betwixt and Between was fantastic because it was full fairy. And you know how I feel about fairies.
Yeah.
And I got all the Kieran that I wanted I loved it. I really, really loved revisiting these characters and seeing the next step of their journey, and it was just fantastic. I've read some really good books actually this year, and I obviously have to mention The Lies of Loch Lomora.
Yep.
And the what are they called? The Gentleman. I was going to say The Psychotic Bastards. No, The Gentleman Bastards. The Psychotic Bastard Religion was what I was thinking of. But no, put Sean Connery back in his box. The Lies of Loch Lomora and the Gentleman Bastard sequence by Scott Lynch. I obviously really, really got into that series, and I am weeping that I'm not going to get the next one for quite some time yet. But regardless, very, very much enjoyed that. Love me my Robin Hood inspired work. And I do feel like Jean and Locke do have one of the most ultimate bromances.
Yeah,
it's
a realistic one as well, in the sense of it's clearly not just a selling point. It's like, no, that this is a set of characters who have real pushes and pulls between them, and
yeah,
this friendship has some real tensile strength to it.
Yeah, I just really, really liked it. I feel that they are unusual characters as well. They're very non-traditional. I mean, the whole selling point of Locke is that he's completely average. He's also very, very thin, like to the point of being pretty much anorexic most of the time, because he's half starved most of the time, because he's almost always on the cusp of dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jean is fat, as in that's actually, you know, a big part. He's a big guy, and he's also described as being ugly, but he's actually the one of the pair who gets the girl. and he's, you know, he's well learned, and he's I like the fact that the bookish one is also the one with the hatchets, yes, who's the best fighter. I just think that it's a lot of unique tropes, very interesting characters, interesting world. So, got to put that out there.
Other books that I've read this year, Tamlin by Pamela Dean, actually is quite an old book. Has been out for a good 20 years, but I discovered it this year, so I'm mentioning it. That was excellent. It won't be to everyone's taste, because it does the Jane Austen using chains of association through literature thing.
Yeah.
But it was an extremely good retelling with a very rich world set right smack in the middle of our own world of Tamlin, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Circe by Madeline Miller. Excellent retelling. From what is very fragmentary bits and pieces of legend, because Circe doesn't really have a set legend herself. She sort of turns up in other people's. So Madeline Miller did a great job of that. And The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is possibly one of the best books I've read that shows, shows a very cynical but unvarnished view of Hollywood, with all the good stuff and all the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And, secondly, one of the best representations of bisexuality I've ever read in a book, I think.
Ooh.
So, yes, those are some of the books that would be on my top list this year.
Fantastic. On my top list, other than the Gentleman Bastard sequence and Betwixt and Between, I've got The Rest of Us Just Live Here by Patrick Ness.
I did really enjoy that. I wouldn't have picked that up if you hadn't mentioned it.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? And actually, it's one of the ones which goes against that trope I was talking about earlier, about the kid who has mental health issues or has mental health problems and doesn't go to see therapy, and therapists never help. Whereas actually, the main character does go to a therapist, and actually it does help.
Yeah, he asks to go.
He says, I need to go back.
I think I need to go back on medication. This is...
Yeah, yeah, and it's not really treated as the be-all and end-all. Like, he starts being healthier and things get better, and he has a better relationship with his friends, ultimately, because of it. So The Rest of Us Just Live Here is right up there. I really enjoyed The Wicker King by Kay Ankrum, which again has an interesting subversion of the mental health trope as well. I'm not going to go too much into it because that would be spoilers, but ultimately it does have a very positive kind of, actually, this is how things work way towards the end of it. So I really, really did enjoy that. I also really liked The Gospel of Loki by Joanne M. Harris, which was very interesting. A bit weird in a couple of places in terms of it suddenly got ultra modern, and I was a bit like, oh, come on. But actually, it's very in keeping with the Loki voice that she created. So I really, really did like that. So those are probably... Oh, and also I should probably say The Prince and the Dressmaker.
I forgot to mention that, but yeah, that was amazing. That was one of my favourites.
Yeah, that was Jules gave me the Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen Wang. It's a graphic novel, and it's enchanting. I just really like it.
Utterly adorable.
It's so sweet. The artwork is beautiful. The whole thing is just fantastic. It's very, very good. So. Yeah, top marks for those. So that's in terms of books. In terms of films,
Black Panther.
And Black Panther is right up there. The newest Avengers.
Oh my god, yes, that was this year.
That was this year. That was, whoa! Like, yeah. That has a lot of characters in it. Well, they did it well.
There was an excellent ensemble piece. Ultimately, I'm not sure how much I really liked it in some ways. I think it's one of those ones when I see the second bit and I know everything's okay, yeah, I'll probably like the first bit a lot more.
But I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was really, really good. I mean, it totally killed me. And I'm not ready to watch it again, that's for sure. But
yeah,
I really, really liked it.
I really enjoyed Ant-Man and Wasp, and not least for the fact that, yeah, we've got older women playing serious roles here, and they're important characters. It was fun. After the trauma of that Avengers film, something like Ant-Man and Wasp, and Venom as well, actually, were kind of good fun.
Yeah, they were good fun. They were good fun. Tom Hardy is fantastic in Venom, yes, actually.
Excellent.
And it's made all the better by the fact that the lobster tank scene... It was Tom Hardy arrived on set and he was like, I'm getting in the lobster tank. And they're like, Tom, no! And he's like, Tom, yes! So he was the one who decided to get in the lobster tank. And I felt like that was an excellent touch.
It was brilliant. This won't be necessarily popular, but I really did enjoy Bohemian Rhapsody as well. I won't go into it because I've spoken about it before, but I did really enjoy it.
Okay, that's good. I haven't seen it, so... So I'm just going to have to take your word for that as well.
We should mention The Cursed Child, though, because we both went and saw that this year.
We did both go and see it. Ultimately, I liked it. I did get a bit antsy about the way that they were portrayed as adults. But then I didn't altogether agree with the way that the books ended, full stop. Because I really felt that Harry should have been an aura for a little while, yeah, but then should have gone and taught Defense Against the Dark Arts at Hogwarts.
Now, see, I was okay with that. I thought, my God, I thought you were going to be a Harry and Hermione shipper there. And I was like, no!
No. I always liked Hermione and Ron together. I just don't like the fact that Ron has been changed into the
He's a buffoon now.
He's the buffoon,
And
yeah,
he
and
never was.
he wasn't a buffoon. He was the strategist, and we didn't get any of that
And
in
Ginny
the
was
Cursed
really
Child.
comp Ginny was really competent and clever and funny and sort of laid back as well, and none of that comes through
No,
in
and
The Cursed
also
Child.
G Ginny was cool. She went off and was a Quidditch player, and she just seems a bit mumsy,
Yeah, she's
like.
suddenly become typical. She's become a stereotypical housewife almost, and
She
that's not
has,
what she was like.
yeah, and she wasn't even Molly Weasley kind of mumsy, you
No.
know. It was a little. I don't know what they did with that. So on
It
the
was
one
an.
side, I didn't like it. On the other side, though, visually it was spectacular. It was nice to go back to the world. Scorpius and Severus should have ended up together, and I'm just going to hold out that they're still a little bit young and haven't realised that they're gay for each other yet. But it will happen. It will happen.
Yeah, I loved that, and I did. It was an excellent play, at least.
Yeah, and
I,
Scorpius was my favorite character. I think the
yeah,
creation of Scorpius as a character is just top marks, 10 out of
utterly,
10.
utterly perfect, perfect.
Scorpius Malfoy redeems Draco Malfoy in every single way because he's so wonderful.
Yeah, he kind of does actually.
He does. I'm willing to forgive a lot of things because Scorpius Malfoy exists in the world.
Okay, I think we should do each a little recap of what we personally have done with our writing and stuff this year, and then mention each also what our plans are for the future for next year, sort of what we're hoping to get achieved.
Okay, all right. Well, Jules, why don't you start because you've got a fair bit to cover.
No, I'm really going to whip through this quite quickly. For those of you who like historical fiction, the second volume in my and Matt Willis's Oath and Crown duology came out in September. That's A Black Matter for the King, so that came out. Obviously, Betwixt and Between completely took over Dead Roads. I was supposed to be doing Dead Roads like earlier in the year, and Betwixt and Between sort of came in, and that was it. I was writing a writing what I thought was a short story, which turned into a novella, which then turned into a really long book. So yeah, apologies, but it's out. Betwixt and Between's out. And I recently managed to release Dead Roads as well, which is a collection of novellas, and in doing that, realised that actually I have too much material. So there will be a second collection of novellas.
Unbelievable.
Apologies. But yes, I've been doing a lot of writing this year. A lot of it isn't ready for people to see yet. One of the things I've been most excited about this year that we've only really touched on between us, Madeline and me, is the creation of an expanded Kestrel Unveiled universe. But
Yeah.
it's very exciting.
It is incredibly exciting. I'm really, really enjoying working on it so far, which I guess leads me into some of the things that I've been doing this year. So obviously, I've actually only published one thing this year, and that was Blood, Teeth and Bones, the novella, which is set during the events of Blood of the Delphi, from Marcel's point of view, mostly. Other than that, I've been working on a number of different things, not least obviously the sequels of Blood of the Delphi, which is the Kings of Hamartia, so I've been working on that one. I've also been working on the Kestrel Saga, book two.
Yay!
Yay! I have been working a lot on my children's book, which is being edited currently by Imogen Cooper, so that's been a lot of work. There's been quite a few bits and pieces which have I've had to rework because writing for middle grade is hard. I'm just going to put it out there. Got a couple of YA things that I've been working on. One of them I was working on particularly for my master's because I started a master's in September. So as part of one of my assignments, I've been working on this YA LGBT fantasy, which Jules has actually read the beginning of and now wants me to write more.
Yes.
So
That's the story of your life, isn't it? You start writing something and then you get me nagging you until you provide the rest of it. That's pretty much how it works.
there has been a lot and a lot of stuff being worked on. Yeah, so that basically covers what I've been doing this year. So Jules, what can we expect from you in 2019?
Right. Well, I've already said that there will be a second unveiled novella and short story collection. It's called Crossing Places, and it will come out sometime next year, but I'm not going to pin down a date yet. Because it still needs a lot of work. Melanie Beckett, my Melanie Beckett series, should be start being released sometime next year as well. I've mentioned her before. She is she is a con artist who has something a bit unusual about her that she obviously doesn't realise yet. And she accidentally loses her soul in a card game and ends up in indentured servitude to a demon. As you do. This is set in the Unveiled universe, and there will be cameos from various different people. And, well, obviously, a lot of people will not... In fact, only Madeline will have actually read the crossover fiction where she makes a brief appearance. Let's just say she has history with both M and Kestrel.
Yeah.
So that's coming up.
Kestrel has a bad taste in women.
Yeah, she likes bad girls.
Yeah, she does.
Just, you know, Mel's all down for that. It's great because Kestrel really, Melanie really likes good girls. And during November this year, I did NaNoWriMo and I wrote a grimdark novel about bisexual and pansexual necromancers. Basically the main character gets sent on a mission into the Waste, which is a suicide mission, having been set up for a murder. It's sort of semi police procedural meets epic fantasy meets grimdark. There's lots of dead corpses roving around, which they shouldn't be. There's lots of swearing. See above, dead corpses. There's nightingales, and there are lots and lots of bad girls in that one.
Haha, excellent.
So I'm going to tidy it up, and I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with it yet, but it will be available one day.
Fantastic. Well, next year you can expect at least the next installment of the Homartia cycle, Whee! All being well. Next year, also, possibly... Possibly.
No, not possibly. We have an agreement.
Look, Jules, you get to read it first. That doesn't mean that people will be published. But I am actually looking at a possible release for the first Kestrel book at the end of 2019. So that is a possibility. But nothing's guaranteed yet. Obviously, before that comes... the Homartia cycle, which I will try and finish off. It's a big one. So that's what we can expect. And as I said, I've been working on lots and lots of other little things, lots of bits and pieces. So I will be feeding you more information about these things as it comes. But yeah, you can expect a fair amount from me. And hopefully, actually, Jules and I will also be potentially releasing some of those crossovers with Kestrel and M next year as well, as things sort of come into the light. So lots and lots of exciting stuff. It's going to be a good year, I say, tentatively. Fingers crossed.
It's going to be a good year. I mean, to be honest, it might be another political clusterfuck, but we will provide excellent entertainment while everything burns down around us.
Yeah.
I think we can promise that.
In terms of Dissecting Dragons, obviously, we're still going strong, so we'll hopefully be bringing on some more guest stars next year as well, which will be great. And do get in contact with us if you are an author or a writer or a creative of some kind, or someone who works within the industry. Do get in contact with us. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have something coming out or... you have a subject that you'd really, really like to talk about, you know, we'd love to hear from you. So please do.
Yeah. Okay. I think our time is up. So that brings us to our Dissecting Dragons recommendation. And I'm going to take it this week.
Go on, Jules.
I didn't mention this earlier deliberately because I was going to recommend it. And that is the Netflix series, The Haunting of Hill House. It's not just a ghost story. This is a really amazing and insightful series based on the Shirley Jackson book by the same name, but really, although it's true to the spirit of the book, it takes it in a completely different direction. And it's about a family who lived in Hill House, which was horribly, horribly haunted, and how it's affected the rest of their lives. So you flash back and forward from the past when they were children, back again to the future, and how their relationships have changed. There's five children in this family.
Mm-hmm.
And it has so much to say about grief and sibling relationships. I know this is all sounding very familiar coming from me, but it's so nice to see somebody else do this stuff and do it so well. And it has an amazingly satisfying ending that I think you can read in several different ways. Now, me being me, I read it in the most Stephen King way possible. But Matthew Willis, who I discussed this with, read it in a much more positive way, because obviously he's not a Stephen King nut. So you can actually kind of read it in whichever way you want, or watch it in whichever way you want. It does have some very good jump scares in it. Obviously, horror doesn't tend to affect me. Hence me quite often saying to Madeline, hey, is this a bit scary enough, when I write something? And Madeline coming back with, well, I'm not sleeping tonight, so thank you for that.
Sorry, it was just the moment of, I don't know, that last bit was pretty scary. Was it? Yes, Jules, things crawling out of wells is pretty scary.
But yeah, it genuinely had me jumping a couple of times. And there are a couple of things in there that were genuinely quite creepy, even when you unravel them and realise that they're kind of personifications of the nastier parts of the human psyche.
Yeah.
They're still pretty damn creepy by my standards. But I would still say, you know what, even if you don't like ghost stories or horror or whatever, watch it anyway, because it is not just horror. That's the vehicle it's chosen. It's about mental health. It's about grieving. It's about building relationships with your family. It's about coming to terms with who you are. And yeah, it's simply excellent. Can't recommend it enough.
Fantastic. Well, on that note, guys, we're going to wish you a really, really happy new year.
Yeah.
And I just hope that 2019 is full of opportunity and joy and excitement and all good things for all of our listeners. And you know, thanks for sticking with us for another year, and we'll catch you on the other side.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders, or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.